Gumbo listeners, we are back again with another episode of Data Protection Gumbo. And of course, you know me, I am your host, Demetrius Malbro. And we have a fantastic show lined up for you today. And we are going to talk about CMMC. And I'll let the gentleman who I have on explain exactly what that is as well. And his name is Craig Petronella, and he is the CEO at Petronella Technology Group. He's also MIT certified in AI, blockchain, and Hyperledger, not to mention number one Amazon best-selling author. And you can also see him on ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, all the acronyms as well. So Craig, welcome to the Gumbo.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. What's this CMMC? What does that stand for? And why is it important for the Data Protection Gumbo audience?
Sure. So the CMMC is called the Cyber Security Maturity Model Certification. It's a mouthful. Yeah. It is for defense industrial base contractors, known as the DIB, or the supply chain, which is typically consisting of a mix of what's called primes, or big companies like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, et cetera. Those are the big guys, right? Those are considered the primes typically. And then the subcontractors are typically smaller contractors, smaller businesses that do business with the bigger primes. Sometimes the smaller guys can be primes on other contracts, and they would be the lead on those contracts. But the CMMC takes what's called NIST, at National Institutes of Standards and Technology. Right. Your audience is probably very familiar with NIST, and maybe NIST 866 for healthcare or HIPAA compliance, or NIST 800-171. That's been around for a while for non-classified information.
Yeah.
NIST 853.
53, yep.
For federal or you know, the more confidential, higher standard. So CMMC takes, it's kind of the new, I guess, iteration or regulatory compliance framework that's about to be signed into law. Why the CMMC came about was because for a long time, the folks that were subject and following NIST and the frameworks, NIST 800-171, et cetera, they were self-attesting. They were saying, yeah, we're doing all this stuff, but nobody checked their work. Like, we just assumed, the government just assumed, okay, you're doing all this stuff, you're compliant, right? And when those folks took contract awards, they attested to being compliant with NIST 800-171 or whatever derivatives. Well, what happened was, and you know this well as your audience, a lot of these folks are getting hacked. So the government investigated.
Yeah, and who's not getting hacked?
That's
today,
right.
Like, right?
We've all been hacked, right? So it's really, what are we doing about it, right? So for the government steps in and says, okay, how many of you folks are really compliant with NIST 800-171? So they came out with the SPRS, Supplier Risk Score, SPRS model, and they came out with what's called the DFARS Interim Rule. And this was in November of 20, I believe they came out with this, or somewhere in that time frame, and basically said, okay, I want to know which of you guys are compliant and how compliant are you, right? So you do your self-assessment and you complete what's called an SSP, or a system security plan, which is basically the executive summary of your security stature and your maturity in your organization. And by the way, if you don't have an SSP, you immediately fail. You're not compliant, and you have a score of minus 203. A perfect score, which you're supposed to have, is 110. There's 110 controls in NIST 800-171. So
it's a lot of controls, man.
Oh yeah, it's hundreds of pages of documentation, and
yeah.
And then there's derivatives and references that a lot of people forget about, called NFO controls and documentation.
Now, let me ask you this. This sounds daunting. I mean, it is. And anytime you're dealing with the government, right, it's going to be a lot of paperwork. You're talking hundreds or thousands of pages, and they may even be fine print, et cetera. But like, how did this whole CMMC thing come about? Like, at first it was a compliance, right? And then I guess the certification came later, or maybe a little clarity just from that perspective.
Sure. So NIST 800, 171, and 853 have been around for a really long time, right?
Okay.
So yeah. When this DFARS interim rule came out, they wanted to know who's compliant, who's not, right? So you basically had to submit your SSP, any plan of action and milestones, or any gaps or deficiencies, because they want you to have a perfect 110. And if you don't, they give you, you know, what's called a POAM, or a plan of action milestone, to figure out what you did wrong and when you're going to fix it, how you're going to fix it. And you have to document that in writing. Okay. So the government assumed that a lot of these folks for many, many years have been following the framework, right? So when they came out with the CMMC, it was supposed to be what's called a delta. It was supposed to be a small step forward and a simplification of, hey, look, we know that NIST is just this big mountain, right? It's right. Really hard for a lot of people, especially the small contractors and the medium-sized businesses. It's really hard for them to be compliant with NIST 800-171. So let's come out with their hope, and their intention was, let's come out with an easier way for these folks to be compliant. We're going to call this the CMMC. Okay. And when the CMMC first came out in the 1.0 version, it had 5 different levels. Well, they've since updated that to version 2.0,
yeah,
which is 3 levels now. If your business was subject to NIST 800-171, the new standard is called CMMC version 2.0, maturity level 2. And you don't. So if you're a new contractor, then you could go straight to CMMC version 2, maturity level 2. If you're an existing contractor that already has a government contract, and you're subject to what is law today, which is NIST 800-171, the next iteration would be CMMC version 2, maturity level 2 or 3, the higher standard. And you have a certain time frame to get that. And if you don't get the CMMC, you will not get a contract award renewal. So if your contract's for 3 years or 5 years, or some of these contracts are really long, whenever you're...
That's a government contract, right?
Yes. Yeah, government contract.
Okay, mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah. So if you're doing business like with the Department of Defense, for example, and you're making maybe a plastic missile part or whatever for the defense industrial base, if you currently are in a contract and you're currently subject to the law of NIST 800-171, you have to take the next step to CMMC 2.0 maturity level 2. Otherwise, you will not get the contract renewal.
Okay. And how expensive is this? It sounds expensive, like to go through the whole CMMC 2.0 process. Is that true or?
Yeah. Well, the reason why, so again, the government was like, okay, this should be a small delta. This shouldn't really be a big deal because the DIB's supposed to be compliant already with NIST 800-171. So the delta to go to CMMC 2.0 maturity level 2 should only be the changes of the delta in CMMC. So it shouldn't be that big of a deal. Well, what happened was it was like this big can of worms that got opened because the government basically found out, oh, wow, so you guys are not even close to being compliant with NIST 800-171, yeah. Which in turn, it's like, okay, these businesses are like, hurry up, we need to get this done like overnight now, which it's impossible because of the immense amount of work. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it costs so much money is it's like this hurry up, catch up period. So what's happened is a lot of these companies that were supposed to be doing all this work and had all this maturity level and policies and procedures and all their documentation and their information technology systems and their security, all this stuff was supposed to be done. We're finding out that hardly any of it's done. So it's an immense amount of work and it's a huge cost and nobody really wants to do anything about it. I'm speculating, of course, because it's so difficult and it's so daunting. And these, it's basically going to hit like a tipping point of, I think, and this is, I guess, the pessimist side of it. I like to be an optimist, but the pessimist side is I think most people are going to wait, do nothing until that contract renewal comes up. Then they're going to evaluate, well, is this contract worth it? You know, is the money dollar amount worth it? Can I make enough profit? And then if so, and I want this contract, then I'll go down the road and I'll get all my ducks in a row and I'll get the CMMC gold star. But if it's not, they may reevaluate. And I think it's going to be a huge weed out process. And basically decimation of a lot of contractors that are just going to no longer do business with the DOD or the Department of Defense and get government contracts. They're going to reevaluate their business models because this is going to be a huge daunting task if they don't have their stuff ready now.
Yeah. Now, is this something that can be automated? Parts of it can be automated, or can we apply artificial intelligence to this at all? Or
yeah, we can. So when I started following the CMMC when it was in beta and I became certified and took all the exams and all that fun stuff. And so I'm what's called a certified registered practitioner, which means I help with all this stuff. The only thing I do not do is I don't do the formal audit. And the formal audit, if you're a level two, has to be done by what's called a C3 PAO. Or a certified third party. I know it sounds what like Star that? Wars.
Star Wars, C3PIO, whatever. Okay. C3PIO.
So you have to have this third party come in and basically check all of their work, right? And then if they pass, then they pass the audit and then they get their CMMC 2.0 maturity level two. Well, if you're a three, if you're a level three, which is the highest level, that's a what's called a government led. So the government's going to come in, they're going to check everything. And if you pass, then you get the three. The level three, and then that's good for 3 years. So you can do that every 3 years. Okay. So yeah, it's a huge cost, a huge burden for most folks. Most folks are just not even doing everything they're supposed to be doing. So I think it's going to be a big shakeout.
Okay. Okay. So
but to answer your question, sorry. So you're asking, your question was, can you use AI? Can we do this easier? So the answer to that question is yes. There are what's called enclaves, which are a lot of folks do not know about. So let's say you're a business and you got 50 people in your company, but let's say only 10 people or maybe even 5 people access the CUI or the controlled unclassified information, the sensitive stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Your company does not need to elevate the security of everyone, all 50. You only need to elevate the security and do all the stuff for the 5. And a lot of companies or our competition won't tell folks that because they want the business to do the whole company. So it's kind of like the dirty little secret in the industry. But yeah, you can get away with just doing 5 if that's what your business
is. Is that the minimum number?
No, like, there is no minimum. You could have one person
in the company. So it's like zero trust, right? Like least number of people as possible have the rights and privileges in order to carry out whatever needs to be done, right?
Correct. And you could, so if you only have 5 people in the company that touch and handle CUI, then you can create what's called an enclave.
And what's CUI?
Controlled unclassified information. It's the sensitive information.
Okay.
That those organizations need to protect. If you could just imagine doing all this work for 5 people is going to be a heck of a lot cheaper than for 50. Mm-hmm. Now, your business may choose to adopt all of certain controls for the whole company. Like, for example, data backup, disaster recovery. Are you really only going to back up the 5 people? Or are you going to back up everybody?
Yeah.
You should back up everybody, right?
Right.
Same thing with security awareness training. You probably should train all your humans. You don't really want to skimp on that. So there's certain things, but again, it's company specific. And technically, you only have to deal with the folks that are handling the CUI. So yes, you can use artificial intelligence. Yes, you can use different layers to automate and do things more efficiently and less expensive. And you could do it for that enclave focus to keep the cost down.
Now, let's take a step back. How did you get, man, this is really like specific nitpicky type stuff. How did you get into this? Like, I'm sure you didn't grow up. I want to be CMMC certified and I want to go to school for this, that. How did you fall into this? And your whole business is centered around this, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So I started with computers very young when I was 8 years old.
Okay.
And I used to run back then, I don't know if you remember bulletin board systems, but I used to run a bulletin board system or a
BBS. Did you have a Commodore 64?
I did.
The big brown clickety-clackety keyboard.
Yeah. And that was my drive. That was, you know, back then it was, do you remember, did you used to have a Commodore 64?
My brother had one. I used to play around with it when he wasn't around, when he
do
wasn't
you remember,
looking.
Do you remember putting in the floppy disks?
I remember the floppy,
writing
the big,
load,
big spiral books with code.
Huh? And then you had to type in load, quote.
Yes.
And then, like, you know, remember the codes?
Modems, dial up, The phone lines were busy. My mom would like, "Can I need to use the phone? Can you get off the phone? It's busy." I was like, okay.
So I can relate. I was using my dad's fax line phone, right? He had a business and running out of the house. And I would run the business, the BBS over that fax line. And I grew it to be so busy. I had hundreds and hundreds of different users on it. Wow. And
at not eight? The same.
Yeah. 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 I started when I was eight. I was more like 10 or 12 at this point.
Wow. Okay.
So, so around that age, I had hundreds of users that were fighting for this one. Because remember, with modems, it was one person at a time. So they were all fighting to use. So my dad's fax line was busy all the time.
Yeah.
He's like, "What the hell are you doing?"
I know, right?
So anyway, so that was the drive to get into computers and then figure out how do they work and all that stuff. So fast forward to 2002, that's when I started my company. It was more business IT support, and it was just pretty much anything a business had problems with a focal point around infrastructure, wiring, server systems, and computers, laptops, etc. And then in 2006, evolved more into what's called a managed security or managed services provider, MSP. And then evolving from an MSP to an MSSP or a managed security services provider shortly after that. And then when we had the focus on security, really started driving, I wrote some books on HIPAA compliance for healthcare, still do focus a lot on healthcare. And then I found the CMMC when it came out, and I was like, oh, the CMMC is the first regulation that actually says, hey, look, there's a third party that has to come in and check your work. So you can't fake it anymore. So I was real excited about the CMMC because it's really still to this day the only regulation that requires that third party audit. Everything else is like self-assessment. Yeah, we're doing this stuff when you know that most people are not. So that was why we went so deep into the CMMC.
Yeah. And let me ask you this. Are there any CMMC requirements around data being on-premises versus in the cloud? Are there any specifics around storing data and where?
Yeah, there's different domains in the CMMC. They call them different domains. And then in each of the domains, you have data security. So to answer your question, in the cloud, the cloud provider has to be what's called FedRAMP approved.
Yep, I know FedRAMP.
Okay, so if you're not FedRAMP approved, you're not going to pass CMMC. You cannot use that system. You got to find a FedRAMP approved. So FedRAMP approved could mean AWS GovCloud, for example. Mm-hmm. Cannot use commercial systems, though. Can't use Gmail, can't use Google unless you're using their FedRAMP approved area. Mm-hmm. So if they're not manned by U.S. citizens, that's a deal breaker too. They have to be background checked U.S. citizens. They have to have the right security on a physical level as well as on the data level. But absolutely correct. If you're in the now, they do not say you must use the cloud, and they do not say you must use a specific cloud provider. But you have to show and produce the evidence of the FedRAMP approval and get all that from your vendor, and then you have to correct any gaps or deficiencies in how you secure. So like, for example, Microsoft, they're obviously the big gorilla. They have a product called GCC High for Department of Defense. And that is a separate ecosystem for government work. You cannot use commercial 365 systems. You have to use the GCC High if you choose Microsoft, unless you choose a what's called an auxiliary product. So you could put a product on top of commercial and leverage encryption and different things, and then that will make it compliant.
Okay.
They also allow you to build your own, meaning you can build your own private cloud, you can buy your own servers, control your own data, but then you're taking all that in-house and all that responsibility. So they don't say that you have to go a certain way. Now, if you go a FedRAMP direction and you find a provider, that does make compliance sometimes easier because they're doing a lot of these other things, maybe like SOC 2 Type 2 compliance, for example.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so if they have all this other maturity, then you get to leverage that as a customer, but not necessarily at a cost savings. I mean, the cloud, generally speaking, is more expensive.
Right. Yes. And that's a debate that continues to go on. And I had my friend DHH David Hanemeyer Hansen on. Not sure if you've heard of him. I think he runs Basecamp and Hay and some other companies. He has a nice history going on for himself. Cool. But Another question I want to ask you, and maybe one or two more questions, like how would someone, let's say we have a computer science student right now, they are a junior or senior looking for an internship or maybe even getting ready to graduate. What advice would you give to them? I'm sure you won't say, yeah, you need to go into CMMC and learn about the cybersecurity maturity model certification, but you may have more general advice for them. What would you say to that college student right now, knowing what you know, seeing what you see, and just kind of being who you are?
Sure. Yeah. Great question. So I would say they really need to think about what do they enjoy doing? Because I'm sure if you went to school, you know, computer science from that time that you went to school or when I went to school to now, it's just so broad, right? And right. If you're coming out of school and you're looking to focus somewhere, my recommendation would be to go very specific, but to really experiment on your own. If you like tinkering with computers and you like the hands-on approach to computer systems, create a lab environment at your house. And that is the way that I learned. And that is the way that I think is easiest to absorb all the material. If you go into it or come out of college and you're like, I just want to do everything, it's just an impossible task, right? Because now we have AI and machine learning and blockchain and crypto. It's just such a big world.
Yeah,
now.
So much.
Has to be more specific. So my best advice would be spend the time to figure out what you enjoy doing and really where you see yourself. If you want to be like a cybersecurity analyst, which is somebody that's looking at, you know, a network level or endpoint level security, analyzing packets, you know, AI, a lot of AI systems are being created and have been created already that are analyzing all those millions of packets for patterns, right, and yeah, looking for bad things. But if you want to be the human element for that stuff, that's a cybersecurity analyst, you know, and that's okay if you want to do that. Or if you want to be more of a C-level, then you're going to need to do more executive functions and maybe get your CISSP or something like that. You know, there's sort of certain certifications that are specific to the job role and type. And I'm not saying or endorsing that you have to get a certification either. I'm just saying I actually don't really believe a lot in the certification process because I feel like it's just a big moneymaker for a lot of people or a lot of companies. It's a easy way when you don't have much experience. It's an easy way to help differentiate yourself because, like, if you spend 3 years building stuff at home and, you know, setting up servers and networking and just kind of figuring all that stuff out because it's interesting to you, that's great. But it's hard to kind of portray that in an interview, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, you could say you did all this stuff, but until you put that person on the job, you don't really know if they know their stuff or not. Yeah. And the big problem in our industry, especially, I think my company has this problem, and I think that a lot of companies have this problem, is we can't find people that can actually function and do the job in the real world. Like, they look great on paper and they do great interviews, but then you throw them in the wild and it's like they paralyze. They don't know what to do.
Okay.
So that's why I'm saying very specific and really taking the time to learn about yourself and what you enjoy, and go deep in that rabbit hole and become an expert in that rabbit hole. I hope that's helpful.
I really love that advice. And I hope that we have at least one gumbo listener out there that's still in school and they take heed to your advice. And I'm sure you wouldn't have a problem with them maybe reaching out to you on LinkedIn or
of course not.
Connecting to you. Do you want to share maybe your website to your company and anything else of how Gumbo listeners can maybe get in touch with you or reach out to your company?
Yeah. So I've got different websites for different purposes. My main website is PetronellaTech.com. So it's my name spelled out, P like Peter, PetronellaTech.com. We have another website called Compliance.com, just like it sounds, ComplianceArmor.com. That website is more specific for CMMC, HIPAA compliance, regulatory frameworks. We sell policies, procedures. We make things easier on that website.
Okay.
It's really the catalyst We even have training for students and, you know, security awareness training for, you know, a generic training that is very real world, right? How to secure your home, how to secure your kids. You know, if you've got children, what do you do with social media? We've got training like that. That's very inexpensive. That is a great website to visit as well.
Okay, nice. And I appreciate the time that you have taken. And before I end the show, I want to let everyone know about the Backup and Recovery Professionals group on LinkedIn that I run. There's almost 26,000 professionals in that group. And I remember when there was only a few hundred. So it's growing like gangbusters. And so I do want to plug that group. Just search Backup and Recovery Professionals and you'll find that we have similar conversations to the ones that we're having here. And also don't forget to give us a thumbs up and also maybe share the video with your peers on YouTube. And if you feel compelled to, you know, write us a nice review on Apple Podcast as well. So Craig, I really appreciate your time and thank you for being a guest on Data Protection Gumbo today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.